The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Football Weekly. Chelsea lose, Vardy scores, death, taxes, etc. But call him point guard. Aston Villa, under their new manager, get a draw with City. Remarkable. We round up all of the Premier League's thrills and spills from the weekend with a special focus on the North London derby. This town ain't big enough for the both of us, says Pochettino as he forces Arsenal to draw with Spurs on his heels. There's FA Cup news, there's Bayern of very good news, there's Austrian Third Division news, and so much more in this Football Weekly. So happy it's Monday, everyone. So happy we can be back here talking to you about a pretty rich list of happenings over the last couple of days. We've got Barry Glendinning in. Hi, Barry.
Hi, Jimbo.
Hi, Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
And hi, Raphael Honigstein.
Oh, good morning, James.
Good morning to you. I want to talk about the North London derby first. And when I'm talking about the North London derby, I want to talk about Spurs. Spurs, Ian.
Oh, whew. Very, very, very impressive for all of about 75 minutes.
Ah, are they still Spursy? Is that what you're saying?
I don't... It didn't... They had played on a Thursday. They played an intense game on a Thursday. They then played another intense game on a Sunday, and I'm not sure they quite had it in their legs. And Arsenal came back and bit them. But certainly for 75 minutes, they were the very opposite of Spursy.
Right. The consensus seems to be that this was a match that, particularly for 77-ish minutes, demonstrated what Arsenal need, basically a top-quality striker and a physically imposing central midfielder, because they got bossed by the beefy chaps that Pochettino put out.
I'll be wary about reading too much into this. A lot of the problems were caused by Cazorla playing so badly that he was withdrawn at half-time. Now, this is...
He was dizzy.
He was dizzy, which is hardly a surprise given how quickly the Tottenham midfielders were flashing past him. But there are a lot of injuries in this Arsenal team. They were sort of caught unawares. Mm. I'm not sure that I'd want to be reading huge kind of Tottenham are better than this, Arsenal are better than this kind of things. It was a game Tottenham dominated and probably should have won. But I don't think it necessarily means that Arsenal are falling apart or in crisis or anything like that.
Barry?
Well, I think it demonstrated that we're seeing a brand new Spurs now. That is the very antithesis of the lads at Spurs. Sir Alex Ferguson team talk, you know,
right.
they're not afraid to graft, they're very spirited performances and have sort of more or less throughout the season. And Pochettino, he's sort of got rid of the more languid players that tend to have notions above their station and substituted them with young, hungry players who happen to be very good.
Yeah, they've got rid of that rubbishy old Argentine kind of creative attacking whatever his name was, the Eric fella, and they brought in this brilliant Lamella guy who's hungry and goes out there and wins tackles.
more tackles than any other Tottenham player.
Exactly.
Does that include Jan Vertonghen?
Woohoo, saucy.
Hang on, what are you boys talking about?
Jan Vertonghen, I have it here actually. I shall show you the picture now. Getting up close and personal with Olivier
Giroud.
Get a
room, boys. Giroud, this is on the back of the Daily Mirror. Giroud so hurt by wasted chances. Not surprising after Vertonghen did a Vinny on him.
He cupped him. He tenderly cupped him. And who can blame him? Giroud's a good-looking boy.
Right. Okay.
It did remind me of a game of It we used to play in our preteen days in school.
Right. How did that work, Rafa?
Well, you had to...
Cup?
Touch somebody, but... It only counted if it was...
All right. Were you particularly good at that game, Rafa?
I was, but you won't be surprised to hear that we didn't have any girls in our class.
Right.
So. Welcome to Utrecht Comprehensive.
Were people running really, really slowly? Anyway, I was going to ask you...
Somewhere.
Giroud doesn't run particularly quickly.
Yeah.
Maybe we found...
I saw some impertinent fellow the other day on the TV telling Harry Redknapp how soft Spurs are and have been for years.
Used to be, no.
Ah, so right.
They
so
weren't no more.
So this wasn't Spursy?
No.
Right.
I'm with Ian on this. I think Pochettino obviously hasn't got the finished product yet, but Spurs have a different kind of atmosphere, different kind of aura around them. And I think it helps building a kind of new corporate culture with these young kids. They I think they're building a new idea of what Spurs is about. Whereas I think in the past, you know, there were all this constant changes, lots of flux when it came to players, and that couldn't, of course, create any real stability and purpose.
All right. Now, I had this notion that maybe it demonstrated what Arsenal needs this game. Some people have suggested that, particularly when looking at the wasted chance at the end. But what did this game then demonstrate that maybe Spurs still need? Where are they still lacking?
Well, if you want to compare them to Arsenal, Arsenal still clearly have a lot of really great players that Spurs don't quite have individually. There's no Mesut Ozil, there's no Sanchez. I'd probably even say Giroud is, even though he's not scoring as regularly, is probably at this moment a better striker than Harry Kane.
Really?
In my view, yes.
Spurs, the only team they've never finished above in the Premier League is Arsenal.
Never, ever?
Never, ever finished above. That's the only side they've never finished above in the Premier League.
Wow, I didn't know that. Is that common knowledge?
Well, I'd not seen it before.
Okay.
But it's a great stat.
It is brilliant.
Could this be their year, Barry? Their season?
Their season to finish above Arsenal?
Mm.
I don't think so, but I think next season could be their season to finish above Arsenal and possibly finish above everyone else.
All right, but isn't next season Arsenal season?
No, this season is Arsenal's season.
Right. Oh, is it? Is it?
Well, I thought that was that this season.
Not when they get
Arsenal's
into the Europa
season.
League, it won't be.
I mean, it is Arsenal undoubtedly have the best chance for a long, long time to win the Premier League, and that draw doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to win it.
Sure.
I think there is a real weakness ahead of them. And if they can get their players back and start maybe addressing the details a little bit better, I still think they've got a great chance of winning it. The only problem I have is that you always feel that perhaps they're not giving themselves the best possible chance when it comes to the bigger picture. I think Wenger not buying anyone apart from Cech is, especially now that they have injuries, exposed as a really grand folly. And I'd be very, very frustrated as an Arsenal fan, thinking my manager sitting on his hands for 3 months.
But Rafa, aren't you the fellow who inveigled against us when we talked about managers needing to buy players in and said that's such a Premier League way of looking at it? You need to, if you're a manager, you need to work with the players you've got instead of always looking to change the players.
I'm not saying that you have to go from one extreme to the other, say that we don't buy anyone at all
right,
because
then.
We're so good that we don't need any
replacements.
Barring a miraculous turnaround, there is going to be a Champions League place up for grabs, a place in the top four, because Chelsea aren't going to get one. And you'd have to fancy Spurs to take it at the moment, I think. And on the subject of, you know, working with your players, have you seen this interview that Arsene Wenger gave L'Equipe?
Oh, when he said about, I don't create players, that's God, I bring the beauty out.
I am only a guide, I allow others to express what they have in them. I have not created anything, I am a facilitator of what is beautiful in man.
Do you know what, he's quoting directly from Ben's podcast master book.
Is he?
He obviously got in early before that first print run sold out. It's an electronic book, of course, they don't have print runs.
But apparently at this level, that can portray me as naive. At the same time, it allows me to believe it, and it often gives me reason.
Well, Rafa, you were just hinting at the fact that this might be a good year for Arsenal because other teams maybe, you know, there isn't that clear favourite for the title. Man City, who've looked at times awesome, only managing a draw away at Villa Park on Sunday in Remy Gard's debut performance. Was this a case of Remy riding to the rescue with a quartet of exciting Frenchmen and you know, generally redressing all the problems of the Tim Sherwood era, or did they just get astonishingly lucky?
There was a certain amount of fortune there, for sure, but I think you could immediately see the changes in Villa. They were so compact for most of the first half that every single outfield player was in shot whenever the camera was invariably pointing towards the left at their own goal and Man City were attacking. But every single player was in shot. So there were no gaps for Manchester City to do anything. And even though Manchester City dominated in possession, I think the number of real chances, it was still quite high. I think it was eight.
to Villa's none.
We say chances. I think it was actually no shots. They did have a couple of chances, didn't they?
Yeah, Villa had, I think, three shots off target.
Off target?
Yeah, Man City had eight in total and right. three shots on target. So what I mean to say is that Man City were dominant, but Villa did limit them to a certain extent. Right. Now, there was a lot of organisation there.
Okay. Of course, Man City didn't have Wilfred Bony after a certain point.
No, nor have they got Sergio Aguero. No. So the international break has come at just the right time for them.
Right.
They will have
How long is Bony supposed to be out for?
Well, he's done his hammy, so I don't know, three weeks, four.
That's good then. Anyway, well, this is a debate that could rage and rage on, but yes, certainly
speaking of raging.
Oh yeah, cool.
Did you see the Manchester City players raging at Rudy Gustave?
Oh yeah, poor chap. Now, they felt that he did that on purpose, threw the ball at poor old Joe Hart.
Oh, it was definitely on purpose.
Was it?
Yeah, he put spin on that.
Oof.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to do that?
Well, I mean, you're just supposed to toss it back, aren't you? You're supposed to be nice.
There was venom
in
that.
It's supposed to be good and dignified and a sign of our integrity. But he really tried to make him look like a tit. And succeeded.
Why did Joe Hart not just let the ball go out over?
Someone hurls a ball at you, you'll just try and stop it.
But you're a goalkeeper.
If you're a professional footballer.
Oh, actually, no, he can't. He
wasn't in
his
penalty area.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Anyway, it was a regrettable incident. But what wasn't...
It was an amusing incident.
It was an amusing incident.
Not regrettable in any way.
It would have been even more amusing had he scored straight afterwards.
Which he almost did.
Yeah. Mm.
That would have led to scenes, I imagine. Anyway, as it was, Villa had a 0-0 draw with City, which means that they get a point and end that run of seven consecutive defeats, and City stay level on points with Arsenal at the top of the table, but only one teeny-weeny point ahead of Claudio Ranieri's brave Foxes, who were 2-1 winners over Watford, and yes... Jamie Vardy did score for his ninth consecutive game, but only after he rattled the ball off Riyad Mahrez. Oh, what are we going to talk about here? Is it going to be that Aurelio Gomez catalogue of errors?
Poor Aurelio Gomez. He's been so good for them. Mm. All those memories of all those mistakes, all consigned to the history books. Took Watford up. He's been one of their best players this season. Mm. And when people say a toddler could have stopped that, it's usually an exact... A toddler could have stopped this.
Mm. This was Kante's shot.
Yes, yes.
10 minutes into the second half, and...
He scuffed it. He got... It was just rolling towards him, and I don't know where Gomez's head was. And then, of course, he took out Vardy for the penalty. Mm. He was lucky there was a covering defender, or he could have been off, and that would have really put a lid on everything. But, I mean, you can see the respect that he's got within the camp that you know, there was a defender came running over straight away to pick him up off the floor. His manager was speaking in support of him. I haven't seen any Watford fans having a pop at him. So hopefully for the poor sod, it's, you know, that's just the one mistake and everything will be fine.
But it was a mistake that enabled, well, the second one anyway, when he clattered Vardy, perhaps a little unnecessarily, that enabled Vardy to continue his scoring run, which I think we're all delighted about, no?
Through the benevolence of Riyad Mahrez.
Right.
Who, of course, has seven goals himself anyway, is almost certainly on some kind of goal bonus, and never mind just the simple competitive nature of your average footballer, but was convinced to hand the ball over.
I'd want to keep Vardy onside myself. But so now he'll go for 10 to equal Ruud van Nistelrooy's record.
Who's got next?
Newcastle. So, well, we'll see, because football's a crazy game. Can't really, you know, you can never be sure of anything. You certainly can't be sure of walking into the England side, says Roy Hodgson, to England's hottest striker. Is that fair enough, do you think?
Well, yeah. Apparently Vardy has at some point expressed an intention to play through the centre.
Oh.
Yes, Roy Hodgson.
Like he's been doing so effectively for Leicester.
Yeah, I know. Heaven forbid.
All right.
That we put a form striker up front.
Who? Because there's strong competition for that role from...
the coruscating Wayne Rooney.
Ah.
Yeah.
And Danny Welbeck, who's injured.
One Harry Kane.
Oh, and Harry Kane. Fairness. Okay. Anyway, Leicester, there you go. Another week passes and they're still up there. But how... Are they going to burn out? I mean, all this scoring and conceding and... Scoring and conceding and coming back from behind.
Four wins, four more wins in 26 games, and they're basically safe.
Wow.
And I had them down to finish bottom.
People were laughing when Claudio Ranieri got the job.
Mm.
And I was.
I wasn't, I have to say. I'm a fan of his, I like him. And this presumption that just because he had a bad time at Greece, that he was a complete buffoon was a bit unfair.
You saw through that, didn't you, Barry? Did you know that Leicester are the second least tinkered team in the Premier League? He has used the same players more often than all but one other Premier League team.
Okay.
Oh, and Nigel Pearson, who arguably is the architect of his success, is that fair? By building this team and instilling defensive discipline and all that kind of thing, is in line to maybe take over at Fulham.
Well, I was doing the rumour mill this morning, and the suggestion was that he may be the subject of a tug of love between Fulham and Queen's Park Rangers.
Right.
So Kit Simons obviously got sacked over the weekend.
Okay, producer Ben says, was it a tug of love that engineered his dismissal after what his son in Thailand? Dear me, producer Ben.
Certainly wasn't a happy finish to his career.
No, indeed. Indeed not. Still here, listeners? Good. Because Football Weekly has been nominated in the Football Supporters Federation Awards, the FSF Awards, in the best podcast category. All right. Barney Roney and Owen Gibson will be slugging it out, woman in love style, it says here, for the best writer gong. And The Guardian is up for best newspaper. There are other categories as well. If you want to get online and vote, because it's all about you, the fans, then you can do by heading to fsf.org.uk/awards. And the voting's open until Monday, the 23rd of November. Excitingly, I'll be hosting the ceremony when the venerated baubles will be handed out.
Is it possible for you to bring your own envelope with The Guardian written in it?
Here's one I prepared earlier.
I let the fans decide, Ian.
Ian's already cast his vote, haven't you, Ian?
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Well, you can't vote for the show that you're on every now and then.
Well, when did they decide that?
Be wrong. Well, it's just...
Well, you voted for somebody else?
Yeah.
Who did you vote for?
I voted for the Anfield Rap, because they're a lovely bunch of lads who do good stuff.
I agree.
That's not the point.
But equally, you can't vote for yourself, can you?
Of course you can.
Yeah, I tried. There's no mechanism against it. right. Well, Barry, you're not going to be there, it says here on this piece of paper. Why's that?
I'm barred after what happened last
year.
Really?
Did they bar you?
No, I'll be away.
Oh, you're going to Australia?
Yeah.
All right.
But you believed it.
I was there. I saw what went down. All right. Well,
actually went down, just to clarify, you know. Despite the best attempts of somebody.
Wasn't it you suggesting?
Are you a bit hurt that he didn't dedicate an entire page of a national newspaper to you in the same way that he did to John Terry?
No, relieved.
Right, okay. Anyway, so
To be fair to Robbie,
yes,
he's got a lot of praise for that article, and some, you know, because he was very cool about the manner in which he was dismissed by Terry. But I did think he created something of a straw man argument by. Because John Terry never actually said he wasn't entitled to an opinion. John Terry just said, he's given his opinion and I'm not interested in it because... But I do wholeheartedly agree with Robbie's point that, you know, it's a nonsense that you can only offer an informed opinion on football if you've played at a very high level.
I'm fairly sure I've heard him suggest otherwise at some point.
Oh, he regularly suggests otherwise on the radio, yeah. But, you know... We know he flip-flops opinion on a regular basis, as I'm sure have we all. I certainly have.
Well, very, very well. Very evenly put. Barry, when are you off to Australia?
I think in 2 pods time.
Right, okay.
I think next Monday is my last one till after Christmas.
Crikey. Down under.
Yes.
Right. Oh, speaking of down under, David Moyes. That's not really...
And no sooner do I depart, actually, than McIntosh... jumping into my chair in the TalkSport studio.
On the TalkSport?
Yeah.
This is true. Barry's giant shoes.
Would you jump into my grave as quickly?
Given half a chance.
I'm glad you went with grave. I was really wondering. anyway, I'd like to talk about European football now in honour of our esteemed guest, Rafael Hoogstein. So Spain, David Moyes, is apparently only a cancelled flight away from already being fired by Real Sociedad. But that's going to be taken care of probably by the time you've heard this, listeners.
Yeah, and not for the first time that he's been sacked in instalments either.
It's funny how an aeroplane always seems to be involved, doesn't it? They're either flying over the ground or getting their flights cancelled. Anyway, what do you think? Where's he going to go?
He's got one credit left at least, hasn't he?
You know, the next middle-ranking Premier League job that goes, Moyes' name will be straight up there.
But hasn't he? That's the thing. It's unfortunate timing. He's missed the boat on, you know, most of the obvious places.
It's the Premier League. That There's boat goes back and forth quite quickly.
Really?
Yeah, Newcastle will be probably looking for a new manager soon.
You think that might
There's a lot of talk that Swansea will be looking for a new manager soon.
Now, yeah.
Which I think is grotesque, but there you go. That's
one
such
win in eight.
Life. Yeah, and I mean, Michael Laudrup, I had a look this morning, Michael Laudrup got sacked after a run that was only one game worse. I think he got sacked after one win in three out of nine games, and or one win in three draws out of nine game Premier League games, and Gary Monk is, I think, one win in three draws out of eight.
Yeah.
But and it's quite ironic, actually, because I took a while to warm to Gary Monk as a manager. I wasn't convinced he'd be any good. And now that I am convinced he's going to be good, he's gone on this bad run and it looks as if he's going to lose his job, which I think would be very, very harsh. But and people have been defending the Swansea hierarchy, assuming he does go, and it looks inevitable.
Oh, really?
I think so,
inevitable?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Well, there's talk that he had a row with Swansea chairman Hugh Evans, who wanted to parachute in sort of a mentor as director of football, and Monk was having none of it because he wants to run the show as a one-man band. And genuinely don't know.
The suggestion is that they wanted a director of football to work above him, and Gary Monk didn't like that. And that's a view that you can have when you're winning, but when your form's as miserable as it's been, that appears to have caused some problems. But one of the real concerns is that the style of their play, while very pleasing on the eye, isn't really reaping any kind of reward. Against Norwich, they had 67% of possession and zero shots on target.
Right.
And it was noticeable that that Norwich had set up specifically just to, you know, let them have possession, then hit them on the counter.
Right.
So unless he's going to find a plan B, a way of getting out of this funk, he is going to be in trouble.
Does his squad contain a plan B?
That's for him to try and find out.
So. Or somebody
but,
else.
But it's the, you know, the first big test of a young manager is when they've found out your tactics and they know how to beat you.
They're at home to Bournemouth after the international break, so if they do want to leave him a little teeny bit of time, you know, maybe that horrible run will come to an end. But Norwich it was who ended their own nightmarish string of results. They'd lost four in a row before this 1-0 win at Carrow Road. Should we talk more Premier League? Then I was going to talk about Europe, but we've kind of morphed back onto the world's greatest league, so we could just stay with
we
that for a bit.
Man United and Chelsea yet.
We haven't, have we? I was saving those for part three. United especially. I was really looking forward to that chat. Sunderland Saints... Oh, that was heartbreaking. Sam Allardyce, he'd said, you know, we have to work on the defence. We're going to work and work and work. And they looked so well drilled. And they kept Saints at bay for 70 courageous minutes. And then Yanam Villa went sliding in. And it was all kind of... Everyone looked like
unnecessary.
Edward Munch paintings. You saw Sam Allardyce kind of with great fistfuls of his face in his hands on the sidelines. And, oh, it was so heartbreaking stuff. They've had one win in 15 games. Oh, anyway.
At least it was only one mistake that did for them this time. You know, that actually brings the mistake ratio down quite considerably.
And it wasn't a mistake made by one of their defenders.
Right.
So there's positives everywhere.
Yes. Okay.
Well, he did actually say, to be fair, Big Sam, he said, we did play badly, but there are positives to take out of this. But no points. You want to talk about Man United, don't you, Rafa?
I think it's a very interesting club.
Tell us why.
An interesting manager.
See, a lot of people have been saying that this is actually the most boring iteration of Man United that we've, in most people's living memory. What do you find interesting about them?
Well, that in itself is very interesting.
Right.
Because... Van Gaal has completely changed the playing culture of the team. He's made them defend with the ball mostly, which is not very attractive. People want to see their teams pressing high, trying to win the ball back quickly, not defending by keeping it and playing at a fairly slow pace. But they're very hard to beat. They don't lose a lot of games. Up front, they have just enough talent to eke out win even when the team collectively don't produce a lot of chances or don't seem like as if they're really dominating games.
And they're only two points off top of the table.
How much better can they still play once they go from having sort of the final third and half of the midfield right to getting it more right further up? They probably have a lot more improvement inside the squad relative to the teams above them, who more or less play where you'd expect them to be at the level.
And
so I think they're looking quite dangerous.
And it's quite interesting the amount of young folk coming into their lineup.
That's a big Van Gaal thing. He, in the past, has actually told Bayern, I don't want these superstars, I've got these youngsters coming through, which seems like a very strange tack or position to take for a manager, but he actually believes in that because some people say it's all part of this Gian Eger trip, because he wants to show he can take these young players and make them into big stars and sort of repeat the Ajax history at different clubs. But of course, you know, United still have a lot of money. They will probably go into the transfer market again, make a big signing, try to sign one player that can make the difference.
Have you heard something, Rafa?
No, I haven't heard anything, but history suggests that they will try where they failed in the past. They failed with the big targets, then went to Martial, and I'm sure they'll ask again. It'd be difficult to get a real superstar in a January window. Very, very rarely happens. But they have resources, and I think that once the team starts gelling a bit more, we could be looking at the champions.
Mm. Terrific performance from Lingard anyway.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah, which is nice because that's his second chance at breaking into the team. Well, this is his second chance at breaking into the team because he was actually in Van Gaal's first league lineup against Swansea. Played very well for all of about 20 minutes, I think, and then got a serious injury. So it's nice that he's worked his way back.
Mm. Some positives there for Man United after their 2-0 win over West Brom. And yes, that's 555 minutes since they conceded a goal. Nice. And they scored some this time as well.
Best defence in the league.
Yeah.
And they're going to come in the top four. You know, of all the crises in the Premier League, I'm not sure that this is the most pressing one.
There you go. West Ham, Everton, as predicted. We had Jacob in last week saying, oh, Everton, and Lukaku always scores against us, and he does. 7 in 7 appearances against West Ham now. The goal of the game, though, from Lanzini and Barney Roney asking the question today. However did they get over in the United Emirates? However did they manage to get this 21-year-old Argentine wonder kid over there?
Money?
Well, yeah, it's got to be that. But there's money elsewhere as well. Anyway, you see, he's only on loan from whichever club it was over there in the Emirates, I think. But they're trying to sign that up permanently. Yeah. Anyway, a 1-1 draw, listeners. Barry, you minute-by-minuted the early kickoff on Saturday at the Vitality Stadium.
Yeah.
What did you learn? 5 things, please.
I learned that Bournemouth desperately need a striker because they outplayed Newcastle in every department bar finishing. I think Newcastle had one shot on goal from which they scored. Bournemouth dominated throughout. They had something like 14 corners. They played really, really well, but they just could not score. And I don't know whether the players will just be shattered by the effort and the trauma of playing that well and getting nothing from the game, or will take heart from the fact that they did play so well, even if they ended up not getting any points from the game. They should have won doing handstands. And Newcastle were incredibly lucky to get away with the win, but it was a good reward for, I think, 1,300 Newcastle fans who made the 700-mile round trip for that early kickoff, so fair play to them.
Yeah, well done to them for making that long journey. They take away 3 points and only their second goal away from home this season. Remarkable stat prior to this match was that they'd scored one away goal all season. That was the worst away goal-scoring record in the top 10 tiers of English football. Right. No team... I don't know how many teams that would be. I mean, that's a lot of teams. No team had done so badly on the road in terms of goal scoring as Newcastle. But anyway.
But they stole those points, you know. But they were really, really outplayed by Bournemouth, which I would imagine will be a source of concern for Steve McClaren and his players and their fans. But it was weirdly, I watched 4 Premier League games over the weekend in their entirety, and the better team did not win in any of them.
Okay, so you watched that one. You watched
Spurs Arsenal.
Right, was Spurs the better team? Yeah,
I thought so by mile. I watched City Villa.
Right.
City were the better team, didn't win, and Stoke Chelsea.
I thought
Chelsea
Barry.
Were by far and away the better team.
Right.
They lost.
They lost, but they didn't look lost without Jose Mourinho.
No, I thought they played well.
Right. Okay. Does that mean then effectively they don't need him and they can just move on now?
Possibly, yeah.
They're not going to move on.
Well, I mean, Eden Hazard had by a considerable distance his best performance of the season. And, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence that that came about when Jose Mourinho wasn't glaring at him from the dugout. I don't know.
Right. He was being remotely controlled.
So, I mean, it's another defeat, but the word is that they're going to stand by their man at Stamford Bridge.
It was a performance with some promise. Mm. Again, just like the
but
one
they
in
lost
midweek.
But against Stoke. Stoke, a team who in 14 matches home and away, since basically coming up into the Premier League in, when was that, 2008, and only ever beaten Chelsea once.
Yeah, well, I mean, the bar by which we're judging this Chelsea performance is low, it was a sign. There was sort of signs of promise there, where before there were very few.
Arguably, they should have had a penalty, no? When Remy went down, I mean, that should have been a penalty. I don't understand how that wasn't a penalty.
Well, we castigate players for going down too easily or inviting contact, and like Remy did the good and noble thing by doing his best to stay on his feet and score the goal. And then we were treated to a glimpse of why players invite contact and go down. I don't think Mourinho would have been very happy with that. I would expect some words from a man who loves his dark arts as much as Mourinho. I think that's probably the worst thing you could do as one of
his employees.
Yeah.
Don't forget, Mourinho is standing up for British values, as he told us last year or the year before. So,
Stoke
deserve credit as well. Eric Peters played almost the entire game with a smashed nose, can't have been nice. And then
he didn't have to smell Ryan Shawcross, who apparently pongs something terrible.
Well, actually, to compound his misery, he then got, I think it was a football, straight into the crown jewels So he was down his knees, his nose smeared across his face, holding his groin, Vertonghen, Giroud style, and looking thoroughly sorry for himself. But yeah, Diego Costa, that was probably his sole contribution of note to the game, pointing out to everyone that Ryan Shawcross has questionable personal hygiene.
I think we're forgetting his vicious assault on the tunnel steward as well.
Now, okay, you're saying that ironically, but I reckon he did go in to do the steward.
Do you think?
He's so good at it that he was in and out before you almost noticed. But he walked over there and trod on the guy's foot. Now, you walked up to somebody before. Did you manage to stop in time? Or did you actually kind of walk all over their feet in the process?
Yeah.
Now, he walks up and, I'm treading on your feet with my pointy boots. And then he was off again. I think he was like, you're not going to kick the ball to me?
Do you think he did him?
You'll get a little bit of cost. I think he did him. And there's not much. I mean, the steward looks ridiculous by kind of reporting him to the police for assault. But
well, that's sort of like this thing where fans bait a player for an entire game and then get an attack of the vapours if the player has a go back at them.
Yeah.
But Costa must be annoying his teammates by now because he's not scoring goals and he's just a nuisance.
People used to say if you take that side out of him, you know, you won't have the same player, but you don't have the same player anyway.
You won't have him at all if he's suspended.
Well, that's true. Do you think he'll be suspended?
No, I shouldn't have thought so. I'm quite surprised it went as far as it did.
For the Shawcross holding your nose business.
No, he definitely shouldn't be suspended for that.
Anyway, so yeah, praise for Stoke. Shaqiri,
Mark Hughes, best game for them. I mean, he wasn't up against much. Baba Rahman was really bad.
Great goal from Arnautovic as well.
Yeah, it was a lovely goal. He had a little bit of luck. Stoke had a little bit of luck. John Walters couldn't connect properly and the ball looped up in the air and Arnautovic was on hand to dispatch it with a lovely scissors kick.
And a great performance again from Jack Butland in goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Joe Hart has competition for once. Oof. But with Chelsea, I mean, Where are the alternatives? You've got two games.
That's never been a problem in the past. No, I'm serious.
He's hired and fired everybody now. Even when you go through the top five on Odds Checker, they're former Chelsea managers.
I wasn't entirely joking when I said before, have they proved they don't need him? I mean, this is such a great collection of players, no? Rafa's shaking his head already, but hear me out, Rafa. This is such a great collection of players that arguably you don't need a genius. You need a genius manager when your players are not good. This is a good collection of players who are having an issue with something, and a lot of evidence suggests that it's the manager.
There is evidence that something's amiss behind
the scenes. So could just anybody step in, and by virtue of not being that cranky fellow who's blowing up on the sideline, get a better performance out
of it? You can survive on inertia for a short time. They did under Avram Grant when Mourinho went for the first time.
This was a very different Chelsea team then.
Exactly.
Okay. This was a team full of big characters who effectively ran the dressing room.
Right.
Who's left of these guys? John Terry, who himself is not in a secure position in the team. Everybody else. There's not a single player you'd say, this is the Chelsea player. This is the guy who's going to lead them, who's going to take them out of this rut. They all sort of have their individual problems.
You wouldn't trust them on their own for too long.
No.
Okay. I think they require constant supervision.
Do you trust them with Mourinho?
This team doesn't run itself.
Do you trust them with Mourinho, Rafa? I know we all feel like he's going to turn it around, but
I'm not sure he will turn it around.
Hmm.
Because I think he's shot his load far too early this season. I think if you start tearing into your side in August and then again in September and then October, then by the time it's November, December, when you really sort of need it, you've got nowhere else to go. You can't escalate your rhetoric anymore.
I don't think he can.
In August, when he was tearing into his side, it was his fault they weren't fit enough.
Yeah.
You know, so it's unfair criticism and people don't react well to unfair criticism. A lot of footballers don't react well to criticism at all, but when it's unfair and unjustified...
There's clearly problems, and there's clearly problems that Mourinho has made for himself, like the Dr. Canero issue. But is it really going to get much better if Carlo Ancelotti comes in for the rest of the season? Is that a long-term fix?
I think it would get better, personally.
It might not have to be a long-term fix. I think history suggests that Chelsea are not necessarily always looking for the long-term fix.
Well, that's what I'm saying before, yeah.
But I agree with you that I think that there will come a point where they feel that the team just does not respond to what Mourinho is doing anymore.
Right now, you've had two performances where, whether or not they've responded, they've played well.
Which two were these?
The one in midweek against Stoke. They're two good enough games. They don't look like a team who have just gone on full rebellion. It just doesn't look like it's time to hit the reset button just yet.
Okay. Anyway, that's our Chelsea segment for today. Jude, there's one other game we haven't done yet, Rafa, and it's your fella Jurgen Klopp there.
Jurgen.
Hugo Klopp. As one famous manager you happen to be sitting beside on a couch recently on TV described him repeatedly. It's funny because this manager's known for his familiarity with everybody's first name.
Well, it wasn't Sir Bobby Robson,
who was it? Harry Redknapp. They lost 2-1 Palace with their usual victory over Liverpool, watched by Steven Gerrard.
Everywhere he goes, everything goes wrong. Have you noticed?
Why did all the fans leave? I mean, I'm with Jurgen on this. 82nd, you're only 2-1 down. You've got, as he puts it, 12 minutes with, you know, probably still to go. Were the team really showing absolutely no sign of life that everyone left?
No, it wasn't like that.
Nowadays, a home match at Anfield is nothing like it used to be, say, 15, 20 years ago.
What is
an awful lot of people there are just tourists. They don't care about the outcome of the game. And they're more interested in, I don't know, getting to the restaurant they've booked or beating the traffic or getting to the train station. Yes. I mean, it's the same at lots of grounds, that a large proportion of the audience are tourists who have no interest in the outcome of the game.
We've seen this one before.
Sort of event junkies, I suppose you could call them. And, you know, they're as entitled to go to the game as anyone else, but it's no huge surprise that they leave.
So those weren't Liverpool supporters?
They probably are interested in Liverpool. Mm. That's the game they chose to go to. But no, they're not like hardcore Liverpool fans. Or I would be very surprised if they are.
I was talking to a Liverpool season ticket holder last week and he said he was worried about the Palace game because he thought at some point Jurgen Klopp's going to realise we've pulled the wool over his eyes because we've been telling him about this atmosphere, the Anfield and the special club, and it's been crap for some time. And it has been crap for some time. There are still moments where it's an incredible place to be, but I've done 3 or 4 Liverpool games in the last 6 months and been sort of staggered at how quiet it's been.
But, I mean, Anfield don't have a monopoly on this. You know, for example, during the North London Derby yesterday, Olivier Giroud could be seen towards the end trying to whip the crowd up into a bit of a frenzy. And, you know, for... It's a North London derby.
Mm. Scoring a goal would have been a good
way. Well, that would have been a good way of doing it.
It's a natural reaction to the, you know, the kind of people who can afford tickets to these games aren't the kind of people who are going to make a lot of noise.
Maybe they were all heading home to tune in to a top TV show and find out what had been happening in Europe. But if they did miss it, the good news is that in part three, we're going to be looking at that very topic again.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. What, Europe or FA Cup? Europe, FA Cup, what's it going to be?
Europe for me.
Europe for you, Rafa?
It's my vote.
Southend went out. Europe for me.
Don't mind.
Okay, we're going Europe. That's right, listeners. Spain. Oh, yeah, we did this. We didn't mention Real Madrid losing against Sevilla, who we saw being absolutely rubbish against Man City.
Four.
Mm. Yeah.
How long left for Benitez?
Don't know.
They're already upset with him, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not liking his style.
No.
Rafa for Chelsea?
There you go. That would be a great
Chelsea fans would love that.
Bringing the magic back.
Yeah. And that was interesting because they had some of the big names back in. James was back in. I saw Bale wandering around with his top knot as well. And yet they still lost. But then again, they're not the first team to lose at the Sanchez-Pizjuan because Barcelona last month lost there. Just Man City would turn around and boss them around. Did you see what Neymar did, Ian? Did you see that?
I did not.
Oh, my word. Have you got a treat in store? You did, though, didn't you, listeners? This was... Who were they playing? Villarreal. They played Villarreal, and him and Suarez are doing all their business up front. Those two have shared the last 18 goals for Barcelona. They scored them all. Anyway, this time around, Suarez puts a ball in from the left wing, and Neymar controls it on his left foot, does a sombrero... spins around, catches it on, and just volleys it with his right foot in, all in the same move. And he doesn't just sombrero. I mean, he puts it kind of 2 or 3 metres over to his right, but completely meaning to, uses that space to evade the defender. And before the ball has come down, gets his right foot ready to lash it into the net.
I think he just made the most of really bad first touch.
Yeah, well, whatever he did, it was genius. Iñaki Williams, though, for Athletic Bilbao... did almost exactly the same goal, didn't he? He did it. He kind of flipped it up with one foot and then boshed it in.
Maybe I've seen that.
I've definitely seen that one. Yeah,
I've seen someone do.
Well, Neymar's is better, but they're both great. Iñaki Williams. It's not a very Basque surname, that, but supposedly he's Anyway, what else happened this week? Oh, in France they had the Rhône derby, which we saw bits of, didn't we, Rafa? It was Lyon. Alexander Lacazette, who'd been the great, you know, missing in action this season, with a hat-trick as Lyon move into second place. And they're not going to catch PSG, who are 10 points clear, but still much better from Lyon. They beat Saint-Etienne at the Rhône derby. There were all sorts of ugly scenes as well. Players getting upset. A bitter derby, that. There was also the Rome derby, which Roma won 2-0 over Lazio. That's three straight defeats for Lazio.
Big Barry. Fan boycott there, wasn't it?
Yes, there was. And indeed, Nick Roche saying, why so many empty seats at the Rome derby, gents? It's because... The prefect of Rome, the kind of police chief, has put plexiglass. He's divided up the curvas. Previously, the curvas were these giant kind of areas with effectively no policing that contain about 30,000 people standing up. And the police idea is that if you go in there, you've got to go in through these very narrow access points. You're effectively very outnumbered, and you're just going to stir up trouble by doing it. So just let's not bother. Whatever they do in there, let them do it to each other and whatever. So anyway, one forward-thinking prefect went, no, actually, how about if we divided the area? So we're not effectively dealing with 30,000 people in one go. But the fans went, that's not how we roll, chums. And if you put that stuff in, we're not turning up anymore. And lo and behold, for the derby, they didn't turn up. Lazio's ultras say they're not turning up for the rest of the season. So have at you, prefect. Anyway, what they missed... was Dzeko's renaissance continuing. He put away a penalty that effectively was given for a foul outside the area. And then a classic counter-attacking goal from Gervinho, who's doing awfully well. But also, worryingly for Roma and their Champions League campaign as well, Mo Salah out for 4 to 6 weeks, a torn ankle ligaments, apparently. All very tight at the top. Let me just say this. In Italy, Fiorentina and Inter are level on points. Roma 1 point behind them. Napoli, yet another win for them. Yet another goal for Higuain. 1 point behind them. So the top four within 2 points of each other. So that's the Rome Derby, the Rhone Derby, and there's also the Ruhr Derby, the real Derby. Jurgen Klopp was saying that this is the Derby.
The mother of all Derbies.
The mother of all Derbies.
Yeah.
Wow. It's like he was in the room for a second. Let me get this right. It's Borussia Dortmund against Schalke.
Yes.
Yeah. How'd it go then?
Well, Dortmund won 3-2.
Pow.
And it was a fantastic game. It had everything. It had goals. It had weird goal celebrations.
Oh, yeah, what?
Aubameyang.
The Batman
took
shirt.
Took off his shirt and revealed another Batman shirt in memory of his Batman celebration with Robin, Marco Reus, last year when they beat Schalke 3-0 in the derby. You might remember that. And
He wrote on the T-shirt, do you remember?
Yeah, but without the question mark. So, bad grammar. But he... It lived up to the hype,
right.
Must be said. It had everything, but it also, despite the fairly narrow result, it also showed that there's still a big gulf between Dortmund and Schalke. Dortmund really outplayed them, could have had more goals. Fährmann was fantastic for Schalke in goal. And Dortmund's 29 points after 12 games would be enough to be top of the table absolutely everywhere. And as Michael Zorc said, well... We have only one problem. Bayern Munich don't play in England or Spain or Italy. They play here.
Right. Imagine if Bayern Munich did play in England or Spain or Italy. They'd be top in Italy. Would they be top in England?
Maybe. We'll never know.
Well.
They just smacked seven shades out of the team in second.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I reckon they'd be top in England.
Right. Well, it's been a lot... Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of comment about that. You know, who wouldn't they... do that to Bayern Munich. I mean, the 5 points clear in the Bundesliga.
Only 5 points. I mean, that really shows you just how unbelievably good Dortmund are.
We're only in November.
Well, yeah, but Bayern have only dropped 2 points all season.
Yeah.
So for Dortmund to be still in the conversation is remarkable. And this is a team who just haven't been told how bad the Europa League is for you, because they went through two qualifying rounds, played the strongest team almost every single time, and just score goals for fun and play a football at a level that I think is up there with the very best teams in Europe right now.
Well, now, going back to Bayern for a second, Lucas W. on this point says, Bayern don't really care what geographical region a team comes from or if they call themselves top teams. They just hand them thrashings on a regular basis. 34 games, he points out, of scoring 5 goals or more. So scoring 5 goals or more since August 2011. They've done that 34 times. That's insane. Wow, I don't think, says Lucas W. Well, I hope your maths is right on that, by the way, but it's very impressive. I don't think any team has done that consistently since the 80s edition of the European Cup. I mean, they are awesome.
Well, I'm sure Barcelona under Pep would have had similar stats.
Oh, yeah, maybe, okay.
And Messi and so on. Even Real Madrid probably scored quite a few goals. But the story really is that Bayern have become the perfect team, certainly this season. Even the Heinkes Bayern weren't as good. And just don't look as if they would ever even drop points. I mean, Eintracht Frankfurt fighting for their lives to get a scoreless draw at home to Bayern last week sort of was the peak of achievement against them domestically. And yeah, Arsenal of course beat them, but they've looked pretty good internationally as well. So it is no real surprise that the club are doing absolutely everything to make Guardiola stay, because they just realised we've never had a coach who's quite as good as this guy.
And the latest on that is, because there was one report in the papers today suggesting that they think they're optimistic about getting him to sign a new deal. Your information, your understanding, Rafa, what is it?
I don't think Bayern are very optimistic. They initially had this idea of talking to him during this week, International Week. I think they've been kind of rebuffed in that. No great appetite shown on Guardiola's side to have that meeting now. Bayern had an idea of presenting an agreement at the AGM at the end of November is a big surprise in front of their members. That is no longer on the cards, unless Karl-Heinz Rummenigge is throwing everybody off the scent, because he said after the game on Saturday that the earliest would be the last game of the first half of the season. So They won't nothing, talk before until Christmas. Christmas. Right. Nothing before Christmas. Mm. And then he said there will be a big Christmas surprise one way or the other.
Okay.
But I think it'll be the other.
David Moyes.
Tim Sherwood.
Yours is better than mine, Ian. Just on the whole subject of the Bundesliga, Shane Connerton says, Yanisai not getting a look in at Dortmund. How is sitting on his backside gaining any experience? He's not getting any playing time?
Hasn't really started in the league yet. He started a couple of games in Europa League. It's been okay. The problem is, in a way, that Dortmund are just so good. I mean, who are you going to drop for him?
Right.
Royce has been injured, then Januzaj had a chance, but Kagawa has been doing so well, Mkhitaryan's been doing so well. Hard for him to get more game time. I think, though, that come the later months of the season, with perhaps one or two injuries, I think they do see him as a very good option to bring on, and then maybe he'll get an extended run.
Right. And what about this story about Dortmund being in for Jamie Vardy?
Yeah, I mean, this came up from the local reporter from Bild in Dortmund. I'm not sure what to make of it. I'm sure they're watching him. I mean, everybody's watching everybody these days, and it's the easiest story to write. You know, so-and-so club monitoring so-and-so. And they probably are, but...
What are you looking at me for?
Because you're the rumour monger. You do the rumour
monger. That's just a roundup of other people's monging.
Right, which is even easier than...
Yeah.
but they don't necessarily need a centre-forward at the moment,
okay,
because Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has scored 14 goals in the league this season, which is an absolutely incredible achievement after 12 games, 22 in all competitions. And he's not even a centre-forward by nature, because he really has more of a... passed as a winger. At least at Dortmund, he used to play as a winger. So he's been absolutely phenomenal, and yet another reason why Dortmund are playing such thrilling football under Thomas Tuchel this season.
Cool. All right. Quick mention for Chicharito, who I think has got 7 goals in 5 for Bayer Leverkusen. Wow.
Have you seen that new up-and-coming striker in the Netherlands as well? 10 goals in 12 games. Caught the eye of Barcelona, apparently.
Who's that?
Dirk Kuyt.
No way.
Mm-hmm. He's back at Feyenoord.
And he's on fire. Yeah.
Oh, and do you want some hot news from Austria as well?
Yes, I do, Barry. And so does Helmut. Helmut said he very much enjoyed our shout-out to the Austrian League the other day. Are you going to build on this momentum? No, frankly, we're so over Austria. What we're into now, Barry, is the Austrian third division.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where... SV Sikirchen, and apologies to our Austrian friends if I'm getting my pronunciations incorrect.
They knew what they're getting into.
Took on TSV Neumarkt. Neumarkt went 4-0 up inside 32 minutes.
Game over.
But it wasn't over, because Sikirchen pulled it back to 4-3 just after half time.
Wow.
And this rocked Neumarkt to their very foundations, and they proceeded to have three men sent off.
So it finished 4-3.
No, it went 4-4.
What?
But the 8 men of Neumarkt hung in there grimly till just before full time, and they conceded the goal that cost them the game. They lost 5-4.
Wow. That's a 9-goal swing.
9-goal swing, 3 sendings off. Sounds like a great game.
Doesn't it?
I'm not having a bit of the cynical hand gesture I've just made across the studio.
He's famous for those, but
authority. Authorities are monitoring.
Right. Are they? Yeah. But what...
the situation, I'm sure.
Are they? Yes.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
Were there suspicious betting pattern by any chance?
Do you know what, Barry? I reckon it's time for your FA Cup roundup. We've got loads of people writing in about the FA Cup. Chet Wengo, who is a Carlisle fan and is very excited about their triumph there. Michael Foot, Josh Whittaker, Nigel Martin, your boys took a hell of a beating, etc.
James Dart.
He doesn't mention James Dart. Yeah. Got Dawn French, Paul Whitehouse in there. Clement Freud. They've got a lot of celebrity fans. He also inveigles against, I'm liking inveigles this week, he inveigles against celebrity non-league teams like Salford City, who are all over the place at the moment. Of course, they got a win, didn't they? Anyway, tell us more.
Well, you've basically stolen all my thunder now. Well, yeah. I mean, it's sort of the two most talked about. Well,
it was
one
the first round proper.
Yeah, it was first round proper of the Cup. Salford City have been hogging the headlines lately because of that two-part documentary, which I must confess I haven't seen yet,
but I understand it's very good. But you do wonder what other non-league teams, you know, when...
Well, yeah, I mean, Salford City are co-owned by one of the richest men in the world and four of the richest former footballers in Manchester. They are playing in a league that's ostensibly amateur, but their players are far from amateur, as far as I know. And, yeah, they beat Notts County on Friday night. And
2-0. The first goal was it the first goal? The one where he has the ball for about 5 minutes and wanders around the pitch with it and eventually puts it away.
Really good goal.
Remarkable. Watching that documentary, I must admit, on one hand, I felt, you know, when you see them beating these other teams, it's hooray, hooray. You can imagine a documentary made from the other point of view of them trying to beat the media lovies of sort of thing. But it did make me think, crikey, what it would be like a football world where teams from, you know, where players from an area grew up in that area, played for a team in that area, and then stayed in that area. Because you see, I mean, the way that whatever the involvement of Peter Lim, that the Nevilles and Ryan Giggs and Nicky Butt, the way that they are kind of giving something back, I mean, it's quite extraordinary, isn't she? Well, it came across really well in the programme anyway. I might be being a bit naive about that. But anyway, great result for them. They beat them 2-0. FC United are playing tonight, is that right? Monday night?
Yes.
Against Chesterfield out of League One at their new Broadhurst Park Stadium. But they're not very happy, are they, FC United? The fans may be boycotting it. The club, they've sold out all the tickets. It's 4,000 capacity. They've sold it all out. And they said, I had a quote from them somewhere, but they're basically saying that this special occasion has been tarnished by the FA moving our game to Monday night. And apparently the FA even had to take out some kind of injunction or something to make them hold it on a Monday night.
They're very upset for a number of reasons. One, that the FA insists they have to charge £10 minimum for a ticket, which is more than they usually charge. So FC United are saying that they
will... Why would the FA have the say over their ticketing?
It's a rule of the FA Cup that the minimum price for an adult ticket is £10.
Really? Okay.
But FC United, I think, is £9, so they're saying that to every supporter who comes in, they will have somewhere on their ticket a £1 voucher for drinks or food.
Brilliant.
And that will apply to both home and away fans. But they're also really angry because they say, and with some justification, Monday night is not a football night. It's a TV invention. And they set up the club specifically as a response against that kind of thing. They want to be doing it on a Saturday at 3 o'clock. Very, very miffed, but with no recourse.
They same people who used to go around smashing up looms and that kind of thing. Is that right?
I wouldn't want to comment on that. But they're also denied any ability to protest outside as well, because I think health and safety restrictions on the number of people you can safely keep in that space. They're very miffed indeed.
And didn't they already turn down an offer from some TV company who wanted to have a reporter in the dugout and interviewing players during the warm-up and all
excellent.
That. So that fans could get, you know, an experience of what a football match is like. And they made the very salient point that if TV viewers want to get an experience of what the football is like, they could always go to a game.
Why, in the cold? After all that TV's done for these people, I really, sometimes, I just despair, really. Anyway, we'll have more on Thursday, I bet. We'll manage to squeeze some FA Cup talk, perhaps, into our Championship special and everything else special on Thursday, when we'll also be looking forward to the playoffs. Ireland in Bosnia-Herzegovina and all sorts of other exciting games. And some big friendlies. France taking on Germany, is that right, Rafa?
Mm-hmm.
And
England-Spain.
England taking on Spain. I bet that France story is going to come up. That France story, this
Ooh.
One here,
Oof.
Front page of L'Equipe.
Oh. Is that actual
Benzema space? And Valbuena? Is that actual? Well, that's a perspective work there. Valbuena's short, but he's the centre of some big trouble. trouble right now.
You probably read the story. See it.
Yeah. Anyway, but I think that's probably our bandwidth allowance for this day. So we'll say thank you ever so much for joining us, Barry.
Cheers.
Ian.
Thank you.
Rafa.
Thank you, Shun.
You, listener. And producer Ben, whose book is excellent and available on what? Amazon, Ben, is it? iTunes? All the, you know, all reputable digital...
I can't believe you're letting people plug their books.
The plug for the...
Oh!
Yeah. One more plug, please.
Let's go back, yeah. So many thanks for joining us today, Barry.
Cheers.
So many thanks for joining us today, Barry.
Cheers.
Ian.
Thank you.
Producer Ben. You, listener, and Raphael Honigstein. And Rafa, if folk wanted to meet you in person, maybe take some pictures, have a chat, regale you with their thoughts on the future of the Bundesliga and that, and hear you talk with Amy Lawrence and Ronnie Reng, is there a forum or an occasion where that might just come to pass?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, James, no. But on Thursday at Lords...
This Thursday?
Yeah, this Thursday.
Wow.
Me, Amy, and Ronnie Reng mm-hmm. will indeed be available to talk about football, sign books, etc.
Oh, right,
so
okay.
If you are around on Thursday mm-hmm. in Northwest London...
Okay.
Is it going to be like Tim Cahill's or Cahill's book signing in Australia? I wake up every morning now and have a look at Twitter, and it's just clogged up with photo after photo that Tim Cahill has retweeted of him posing with the many, many tens of thousands of people who appear to be going to meet him at his book.
Is he doing
a tour? Yeah. Book.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
And he seems to be doing very well, actually.
Well, you could mute him.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, I've no. He's a very handsome man and a likable chap, so I've no great objection to seeing him pose okay. with his public.
It wouldn't make my top 10, I have to say.
Yeah, handsome. It's a 6:30.
6:30 in the meantime. Yeah. Okay. Super. All right then, listeners. Enjoy yourself till then, and we'll see you on Thursday in one way, shape, or another.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you've got many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, head to squarespace.com/guardian.